Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hey everybody, I'm Larry Port. This is the Dream Job Cafe. And I'm here today with Frank Milano. He is a partner at Deloitte, which is a big consulting firm, one of the biggest in the world. And he's actually the managing partner of Assurance. So Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Larry. Good to see you.
Yeah. So Frank, tell me, what is Assurance and what do you guys do?
Yeah. So we're one part of Deloitte, as you mentioned, which is a massive professional services firm. Consulting, tax, accounting, advisory type work. I am the managing partner for our assurance business, which is, like I said, one of our four lines of business. And our job is really to help clients with complicated accounting and internal control type issues. So companies come to us for help with cybersecurity, with all manner of things that require them to be compliant to run a good business. And that's essentially what we do. Now, there's many different flavors of that. There's many different regulations that we help support, but by and large, we're there to help both our audit clients and our relationship clients.
Right. So for people in school and recent graduates, this is like kind of like maybe a hidden area of business that you might not realize, but like businesses have to be compliant with any number of different things, whether they're like, I would think like legal things or whether like it's a data center that needs to have some sort of like security compliance. So everything, right?
It's all of that. Yep, absolutely. And there's really, you know, sort of, there's almost a seamless end of regulation. And it's not just regulation. There's companies that want to do things really well, right? So we help them optimize along with comply. But, you know, we typically look for accounting and finance and economic majors, really starting to focus more on people with some degree of IT experience or aptitude, if you will, you know, a minor in MIS or data science or something like that. Is really where, you know, where we start to find our talent on campus.
Wow, very cool. So, and then in consulting in general, the whole model is that the consulting company finds its clients. I don't know if you find the clients or if there's salespeople to find the clients. And then you have like, these are not like usually short-term engagements, right? These are usually longer-term engagements and you serve as trusted advisors to help them deal with whatever issue there is. Is that a good way to summarize
it? Exactly the term we use. We look to be our client's trusted advisor on whatever the topic happens to be. Our relationships change. Some are 4-week projects, some are 4-year projects. It certainly could depend on what we're being asked to do, you know, by the company. But trust is a huge part of it in whatever we do. So, you know, our clients expect us to show up and bring our best all the time. We're very fortunate in that we, you know, we tend to get very talented people that want to come work for our firm. So we're able to put a good team on the field and it's a lot of fun. It's a constantly changing environment. There's always something new. There's always new clients, you know, to help with. There's new parts of old clients to go help with. And what I like about it in particular is I get to work with clients and organizations, really, not just companies, across the board. So all sizes, all shapes, all over the world. So it's fun. You know, it takes time, certainly, to get there. I didn't start out that way. I started out auditing a very specific client in New York City and spent a lot of hours, you know, reading spreadsheets and poring over the numbers. But eventually, you start to see other things and you start to manage other people as you're working your way up. And, you know, the soft skills part of it is huge, right? So, you know, leading a team, being able to communicate with a client, both verbally and written, is a skill that seems to be getting more and more rare these days and something we really value. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. It's a very dynamic environment. It's very fast paced and, you know, people tend to like it.
So I remember when I first graduated, I'm trying to put myself back in the day of like my friends who went into the consulting business. And so what I always thought was kind of cool was like, first of all, one of my friends, he was stationed somewhere. I think he worked for Arthur Anderson at the time, which is now Accenture, right? And he ended up like he had a client in Denver. So he'd be in Denver and then he maybe had a client somewhere else. So he got like, as a young professional, it was kind of cool because he got to like live in these different cities and it was never the same thing. So I would think like for young people that are like interested in entering the workforce, I would think that would be like do you find that is a huge draw for them?
Very much so. Yes, very much so. So we find that our youngest people joining us love that part of the job, right? They love having different clients in different cities. You know, traveling for the first time on business is fun when somebody else is paying for the hotel room and the meals and the like. You know, I've done a ton of traveling in my career. I've been very lucky to go to some really good places. You know, but we have a model where there are parts of your life when you're starting a family, when you're trying to take care of elderly parents, as you've moved along in your career, and you're more like where I am, where the travel that you've been doing for 30 years starts to get tiring. And, you know, we're able to work remote an awful lot. It's very different than it was when I started, where you had to leave on Sunday night and come home on Friday and feel like you had 24 hours at home to sort of reorganize yourself and get back to the client site. We're pretty flexible now. I would say our clients do expect us to show up. And again, a lot of our people love that part of the job. But it's not quite as intense as it probably once was, you know, many years ago. And we actually find that a lot of our people look for opportunities to permanently live elsewhere. So we can second people all over the world. You know, if we have a major project going on in Japan and we need, you know, 12 English speaking people that know a specific accounting rule, there's an opportunity potentially for them to go live there for a little while. So a lot of the people on my team have spent periods of time in their career elsewhere and without, you know, throughout the global network of Deloitte offices and serve clients that way. So there's a lot of opportunity for people that want to see different parts of the world for sure.
That's very cool because I didn't really know that these opportunities were available when I was in in college, and I was obsessed with I lived in Spain, I lived in Chile afterwards, mm-hmm. but you know, I never mm-hmm. knew that you could go to these places and do anything other than you know, teach English as a second language for a small mm-hmm. wage. But then I joined Morgan Stanley and you could live in all these different countries. Yeah. Now, so I'll ask one more question on this front because I just think it might be interesting to people. But you've done some serious work traveling in terms of destinations. Like I've heard you one time you were going to India. Yeah. Where all have you been?
So a very large part of our practice is actually based in India. So everybody in a leadership role at Deloitte spends a fair amount of time in India, right? We have people there, we have our teams there. So, you know, we work better in person, collaborating and getting to know people and forming relationships. So I've been to India several times for sure. My travels have taken me all over Europe, all over South America. I serve a client today who is predominantly focused on the Latin American market. So I spend a lot of time traveling for them throughout Latin America. My Spanish, I don't think is quite as good as yours, but it's functional. It's getting there out of necessity. I just got back from Dubai. I was there for, you know, an internal leadership meeting. I was in Singapore a few weeks before that. So I've been to a lot of places for sure, have a lot of frequent flyer miles that I hope to use when I'm done working and, you know, saving them up for some good stuff. But again, it's really a privilege to be able to work in so many different environments, so many different cultures, see so many different places. You know, when you go back with your family, it's a very different experience. You know, I have one vision of London where I, you know, land, run to the office, you know, go to a conference room and, you know, you don't even know you're in London. You could be anywhere in the world, right? And then when you go with your family on a vacation, it's obviously a very different experience. But I definitely count among, you know, many rewarding parts of my career have been getting to see a lot of different places around the world. And it's definitely, you know, a highlight for me, but it's not for everybody. There's a lot of people who don't love that part of the job. And, you know, you seek out a role that where you have a client that's based where you live and they need you there, you know, 90% of the time. And that becomes your niche. That becomes, you know, sort of your thing. And
so
those options are available too.
Let me ask you, so it sounds like this career is so there's a lot of different, can you speak to the different areas of expertise that people that a company like Deloitte is looking for and what they offer to people? And I mean, it sounds like it's almost like a choose your own adventure, especially if you can stay close to home or whatever it is. Can you speak a little bit about the variety?
The professional services firms that I work for and compete with, you know, provide basically three types of things, right? Consulting services, tax services, and auditing and accounting type services, right? So your career, your schooling sort of leads you toward one of those. But then expertise in one of those areas often leads to, you know, to something to offer elsewhere, right? So you can start out as an accounting person, become a CPA, as an auditor, and then make your way into consulting and then do, you know, finance transformation projects for clients, right? That's a huge path that a lot of our people choose to follow. And I would suggest that it's pretty common for people to end their career in a different place than where they started it in professional services. So a lot of people become CPAs, but not everybody finishes as an audit partner at the end of the day or a tax partner at the end of the day. They tend to, you know, want to do other things or go see other things. And both paths are available. So, you know, so somebody entering this profession doesn't have to decide. I tell this to our youngest people all the time. You don't have to decide today where you want to end your career. Just enjoy the ride, enjoy the sort of the travel. Don't pass up a good client opportunity because it doesn't sound like something that you want to do. Some of the best projects I wound up working on over the years were the ones that sounded the worst in the beginning. And I met great people and learned a lot. And yeah, it might've been a hard project and the client was, you know, challenging or whatever. But at the end of the day, you get something out of every experience, especially when you're so young in your career. When, you know, when you've been working for 2 years, a 6 month project is like 25% of your career. You know, I have whole years of my career that I don't even remember, right? You know, it's been 30 years. So I encourage people to sort of, you know, take the next thing, whatever it is, and make something out of it. You're going to learn something no matter what. I'm still learning today. You know, I've been doing it for 30 years and every project I start, every role I take at the firm, you know, there's always something, you know, something new to learn. So yes, it's definitely a choose your own adventure. You have to sort of go with the flow, but again, it's a good way to make a living. I've enjoyed it.
Just so people know, like a managing mm-hmm. partner, like basically what Mr. Milano here is he's kind of like the CEO of this division inside of the, I don't know if that's fair to say, but it's a big job. And, and so, you know, obviously you've been very successful here. Did you know you wanted to do this? Like, tell us about your career journey when you were in like high school, college, what were you thinking?
So I took an accounting class in high school and had a great teacher, and he got me thinking that, you know, this might be something I would want to study. You know, I come from a fairly, you know, humble background. My dad was a mechanic. My mom stayed at home and raised us and didn't work outside the house. I went to a state school, went to SUNY Albany because that was all I could afford, paid for it myself.
Go Tigers. And, do they have a mascot?
Danes. It was the Danes. I didn't really care much about it then. It wasn't that big deal there. It was really a school. You know, so I sort of knew that public accounting was a good way to enter the workforce, you know, the white collar workforce very quickly. I was very interested in getting out of school and getting into the workforce. And my parents thought that, you know, CPA would be a fantastic thing to be. So that's what I did. I, you know, jumped on that. And like I said, I started out in the audit practice at one of our now competitors, Pricewaterhouse in New York, and worked, you know, 3,000 hours, I think, my first year. Just, you know, it's a grind. It's a brutal, it can be, you know, depending upon your assignments, there could be a ton of hours involved. And, you know, nobody loves that part of it, but you get through it, and, you know, passed the CPA exam, became a CPA, made my way up to, you know, a certain level, and then got into consulting, right? So I got more into this finance systems side of things. Again, it was just an opportunity that was presented to me and I took it. I was sort of tired of the auditing part of it and wanted to see other things. And, you know, to this day, having been being a CPA still serves me very well. I now use my CPA license. I actually sign reports for clients that, you know, require a CPA to sign. But I had a huge chapter in the middle of my career that had nothing to do with that work, right? It had everything to do with optimizing the finance function at a particular company, right? I was in a consulting capacity there. So it takes roots. So I didn't know exactly where I wanted to end up. I didn't, you know, start out my career wanting to be the managing partner of anything. A lot of people that enter our profession want to make partner. They think that's, you know, sort of, you know, the top in it. It's a very rewarding, you know, way to make a living for sure. So once I got into the profession and I got over all the hours in the early stage, I did think I wanted to be a partner. I've, you know, stayed in professional services my whole career. A lot of people will leave and come back at some point. And it's just, for me, it's been a good spot. But many more people leave the profession than stay in the profession. That's for sure.
You know, it's interesting hearing you say this because, like, if at corporate law firms, a lot of times, mm-hmm. you know, the first couple of years are like very long hours, very, mm-hmm. you know, a very tough grind. But in corporate law, a lot of times it just stays that way. Where it sounds mm-hmm. like in this, you pay your dues at the beginning and then it starts to become more, you can start to have a more of a normal life.
You start to get more control over what you're working on, right? So you're able to, at least at my firm, you know, it's a very people focused work-life balance place, right? We very much care about the career journey that our people have. You know, we don't make anything, right? We only have people. That's it. That's our asset, our brand and our people. And yeah, you know, in the beginning, you work hard throughout. Don't get me wrong. I still have some weeks where, you know, if you count the travel, you're working 60, 70 hour weeks at times, right? But the work-life balance part of it is an enormous part of what we focus on as a profession, but our firm does it particularly well. And, you know, it looks like sometimes there's busy weeks and other times there's less busy weeks. It looks like I have to be at home today because I'm having a delivery. So I'm going to just work, do my work from home. It looks like, I have a dentist appointment at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So I'm just going to go do that. We treat our people like adults, right? They're adults, they're professionals. And, you know, I don't ever really care where my team is, as long as the work's getting done and things are moving along the right way and the client is satisfied with the work product. It's not a 9-to-5 type job, right? But the work-life balance could go both ways. It could eat you alive if you let it, like if you just work and don't do the life part of it, it doesn't work, right? It also doesn't work the other way. You know, there are times when we have deadlines and unfortunately that becomes the priority. But, you know, like taking your cell phone and your computer on vacation and things like that, not acceptable. Like we don't really have that kind of culture. And when you're away with your family and you're on vacation, that's where you should be. Now, in my role, I always have my phone with me. There's always emergencies that come up. I have 300 partners that work for me, 5,000 people. It's a big business, right? So, you know, things come up. But, you know, Thanksgiving holidays coming up, everybody's going to shut down. Those are the best times of the year because, you know, everybody's out of the office. The clients aren't looking for you and it's fantastic and you really enjoy it. But we get a lot of time off. We're able to take, you know, long vacations when we need to. And it's, you know, overall, it's pretty good. It's definitely not your typical 9-to-5 corporate grind. There are weeks that are tough and then there's weeks that, you know, that aren't so bad.
So, and I want to make sure I ask this question the right way for those listening, but I think, and I don't know if this is still the way, but when I was hiring a lot of people, I was hiring a lot of people in the millennial generation. I know a lot of the people entering the workforce are now Gen Z, but it was shocking the amount of people that I talked to that weren't really willing to like put in the elbow grease and kind of expected the reward. And then there was another cohort that just worked their butts off and just kind of ate those people for lunch. Mm-hmm. What are the expectations for you? Are you seeing, and I'm not looking for stereotypes or anything like that, but what are you seeing that and how's that all playing out right now?
That are entering the workforce now, they tend to want to understand what the purpose of the work is, right? More so than you and I did when we started. I was told to do a bunch of tasks, you know, audit a bunch of spreadsheets and I did it, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Today, people entering the profession tend to want to understand why are we doing this? What problem are we trying to solve for the client? How does this contribute to the greater good? And it's fascinating to me that it's great. It's wonderful that people care. I will say that I find plenty of hardworking people still entering the workforce. There are some that aren't quite ready to enter the workforce. You see that as well, where there's been a propensity to, you know, sort of prepare and study for exams, right? And there's just a focus on that in the educational process these days. And, you know, you can't study for a client meeting. You have to just kind of know the answer, right? And you have to know how to react and read the room. And those are the skills that are very difficult to teach. We spend a ton of time on educating our people on how to work in our profession, right? So we don't just expect people to come out of campus and then knock it out of the park, right? We have an enormous education program that we have in place. We have a campus in Dallas called Deloitte University, where it's an actual like a university campus. And we do tons of our training there. It's a big part of our brand and our culture. And, you know, we teach everything from soft skills to technical skills to, you know, client communication skills, all types of different settings. And we put a ton of energy, a ton of resources into helping our people want to be good at our profession, because schools don't do that. Like, you don't come out of college knowing how to be a great consultant, right? It takes a long time to sort of develop those skills. But, you know, we spend a ton of time, investment in helping our people get there. It's a big part of our culture. A big part of our culture is sort of an apprenticeship model, a mentorship model. And I'm evaluated on how good a job I'm doing at bringing, you know, the next generation along. So our culture sort of fosters that. It's not forever. You know, it's not like that everywhere, though. There's definitely places where, you know, you're expected to sort of show up, work hard, and do your thing.
So then when you hire incoming new, like, young graduates, they go through, are they in a dedicated training period for, like, a month, 2 months, 3 months?
What's that like? I think there's a couple of weeks when they start, and then over the course of the first year, there's a lot more training than there is in even the second year in terms of formal training. A lot of the training happens on the job. Our third and fourth year people are supervising, you know, our analysts, our campus hires, our first year people. And a big part of their job is to help their team be successful, right? And help them learn the things that they were taught 3 or 4 years ago. So it's an enormous part of what we do. It's built right into the really the fabric of the culture.
Okay, so very cool. So that said, who do you think thrives in this career? Like what type of person with what type of attitudes and like who maybe should run for the exits?
Well, if you're looking for, you know, to be handed a lot of prizes without doing any work, this is not the profession, right? You have to be a baseball player to do that or something like that. If you could do that, I would do that over professional services. But if you're stuck being a consultant, the people who thrive on ambiguity, the people who don't necessarily need a ton of structure to be successful, you know, if you're looking for that, corporate America will provide you with that. All you want. You can certainly sit in a cubicle and close the books, you know, every month, and you have the same, you know, the first day of the month looks just like the first day of the next month, right? And that's, and for some people, that type of structure is what they need to thrive, and that's okay. That is not the case here, right? No two clients are the same. No two projects are the same. Even if you're on a recurring audit and you audit that client, you're on it for 5 years. Each of those 5 years will look and feel different. First of all, you'll have different responsibility over the course of those 5 years, right? Because you've moved up in the ranks and you're progressing to take on different parts of the engagement. And then, you know, client personnel change, your teammates change. So there's a lot of factors that come into making your job feel different on, you know, 1 year over the next. And people who embrace that and are and welcome that tend to do really well. The other thing is, I would say that people who come in and don't think they know everything, but are willing to learn and are ferocious learners tend to do really well. So some of the people I love working with the most are some of the maybe second, third year senior consultant level people who, when I show up at the client, they corner me and ask me questions about, you know, how should this be and how should that be? And I love that. I love that attitude. I love that, you know, sort of go get itness. And I'm very approachable like that. All of our leaders are. We have to be because, you know, these younger folks are what we have. They're the ones that are at our clients every day. And, you know, they're doing the job, to be honest. So, you know, me helping them get better is a big part of what I do.
So how do you spot this kind of talent? Like, if you have a lot of projects, you have a lot of clients, you need more people. Can you talk, I guess, a little bit about like the kind of what you're looking for when you guys hire?
Yeah. I mean, so we're very fortunate in that we tend to get the cream of the crop, if you will, you know, on campus. So good grades are clearly important, but we look for people with work experience, and it doesn't have to be, you know, interning at your dad's accounting firm, right? That's not necessarily what we're looking for. I find that some of our younger folks that worked at Chick-fil-A are great because they understand fast pace. They understand, you know, ambiguity. They understand that you have to, you know, work your way up. We look for, you know, people who are bilingual are incredibly impressive to us because the communication skills are critical, not because we're going to necessarily put you on a client that requires you to speak a different language, but that type of ability to learn is really important. We look for people that are curious and, you know, want to work and sort of identify. It's hard to spot those types of traits, but we're evaluating that along the way, right? So it's not just the, you know, what you have coming to us off of campus. It's what, how do you evolve as a professional over time? And it's the curiosity, the constant learning, the ability to communicate that really set people apart. The technical skills are table stakes, right? We expect our people to be good accountants. Their schooling prepares them for that. We help them learn that along the way. But eventually, it's very hard to distinguish yourself just based on your technical aptitude. It's how you're able to take what you know technically and translate it to help a client that starts to set people apart.
So you're not hiring, you don't have to be like a Harvard or Yale-y to get this job, right? You went to SUNY Albany.
I've never hired anybody from Harvard or Yale. No.
Right. So it really does. So it's not the like brand of your education that matters. It's like,
There are certainly, we have relationship with certain schools for sure that we like, you know, whose accounting programs are very strong. They tend to be large public universities, candidly. We certainly recruit from private schools as well for different parts of our business. But, you know, the Ohio State University is a great feeder school for us. You know, SUNY Albany, where I went, SUNY Binghamton are still great feeder schools for us. You know, here in Florida, Florida State, University of Florida, you know, like they produce fantastic employees for us. And we, you know, we spend a lot of time on campus. We spend a lot of time helping to shape the coursework, the types of project work that we think the students should be doing. You know, I volunteered to teach classes along the way. You know, over the years, it's, you know, going to campus and talking about the profession is one of the things that's expected of our leaders. And I love doing it because, you know, people really want to get into this line of work. It's a really good way to start your career.
Yeah, no, and it makes total sense. I know I used to try and do the same thing at our local university at FAU in their computer science department mm-hmm. because I found that mm-hmm. the kids were not being prepared correctly for sure. what we needed. Now, we're living in a pretty kind of crazy world right now, a lot of disruption, mm-hmm. a lot of white collar automation with AI. How do you see the profession playing out? I mean, obviously no one has a crystal ball, but no. What do you see over the next like 5 years, maybe?
5 years is hard to say. We're definitely seeing the impacts of AI. You'd be blind, you know, sort of not to. We're still going to need a workforce. I can tell you that for sure. That goes without saying. It might look a little different. We might need more technical savvy people than we have sort of in the past. We might need our people to embrace the use of technology differently than they have before. But the technology is going to make our people better at what they do, a little bit more efficient, hopefully, but not particularly different. I mean, the mission still hasn't changed and it's not going to change, right? You know, on the audit side of the house, we're there to provide assurance to the capital markets that, you know, the company's financial statements are right. On, you know, when we're not the auditor, when we're the advisor, our job is to help optimize a process and help a company perform better. And technology alone does not do that. I will tell you, Larry, when I got out of college, one of the first things that I learned in audit entry training at Pricewaterhouse was how to correctly hole punch a audit file. So there was a big stack of paper and you had to, you know, put a hole in the proper corner so that you could spike the file so that when you brought it to the partner that he or she could flip through it and review it. Another big part of my job as an audit person early on was making sure that all the files got locked up in the trunk at night. And for the weekend, I had to bring the trunk on the subway in New York from the client site to the office. So now we don't train people to do that anymore, right? Because that doesn't exist anymore. When I started, I didn't have an email at work, right? So things have changed a lot. My point is that we've seen a lot of these technology revolutions, right? The internet was going to change everything and all of that. You just go with the next wave, right? It's definitely going to have an impact. There's no doubt. Are there going to be fewer jobs? Impossible to say. Are there going to be different jobs? That's a definite. You know, there's yeah. definitely going to be a need for different types of professionals across the board. But, you know, for now, we're hiring. We're still bringing people in from campus. Our clients still expect us to show up, not a robot. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it evolves for sure. Like I said, I've seen multiple iterations of this over the course of my career. This is the next one, and we'll see where it takes us.
I wouldn't be shocked if you had a whole auditing division to audit AI, because it's like, I mean, everybody's, I love it. I use it, but like, I mm-hmm. do not trust it. So I
started the conversation with trust, right? It's a huge part of it. I mean, the first time you prepare a document for a client using AI and it comes out the wrong way, you know, nobody's going to like that, right? So it's, again, it's an enabling tool. It's an enabling technology. It's not the answer.
Yeah. For some reason, I got ChatGPT completely like screwed up around the axle. Like it now, every time it answers me, it says, let me give you the clear, unvarnished truth about this, because I'm like, because at one point I said, I'm a very pragmatic person. I don't like any fluff. So everything is like, let's get straight to the point. And it's like, okay. Yeah. All right. So this is all great information. Frank, thank you so much for your time today. Yeah, I really do appreciate
absolutely.
It.
I hope it helps somebody who's, you know, maybe on the fence about entering the profession, go for it, right? You know, and if it's not at Deloitte, that it's someplace else. It's a great way to start your career no matter what. Opens up a ton of doors across the board. A lot of companies, you know, recruit from us. They don't hire on campus, but they look to us to provide them with their future talent, our future clients. So, you know, hopefully anybody that was on the fence is ready to jump in, because it really is a great way to make a living.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Frank. Hey, if you like this episode of Dream Job Cafe, like us and share it with your friends. And if you can, be grateful for something today.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.